just like to introduce Lompa Chendi, who is ordained the same, almost the same Vasa as me, and we were brothers together, and we are still brothers in the early days of what Lompa Pong was Lompa Cha. And Lompa Chendi is now the abbot of a very beautiful monastery in Chonburi, which is due east of Bangkok, maybe a couple of hours from Bangkok. Beautiful monastery. So if you're ever in Bangkok, it's a good place to visit.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Ito parang satajang thambo so tapo ti. Kung kaugat kung magyan. Pero tang kana song yan sa thambik tuk-tuk-tru. Kapo karun pon satha sa tuchon yak yon.
So Lompa Chendi began by asking for the opportunity to speak from Thanajaya Viradhamma, who is his slightly senior monk, and then extended his blessings to all of the lay people here that have gathered to practice the Dhamma. And then he explained that Thanajaya Viradhamma had given him the opportunity, having travelled out here from Thailand, as he said, I'm still feeling not fully cleared up just yet. Still feel a little bit of jet lag from travelling, but never mind, because my pleasure to speak to all the lay community here, and so it's an opportunity for meeting together. And then that's the opportunity that he feels that Ajahn V has provided. So it's his pleasure to speak for a little while this morning. This is my first time to come and visit Tisarana Monastery, even though the invitation has been extended to me for many years. And also, I've been invited by Venerable Ajahn Viradhamma and also Venerable Ajahn Pasanoa in America to make a visit to this monastery. But the conditions have never fully come together. At times my health hasn't been ideal, or the conditions just haven't been suitable enough to be able to make a trip here. But this time all of the factors have come together, and so now that I'm here, this is my opportunity to offer a bit of the Dhamma to you. Because on the occasions when people greet, sometimes hospitality are offered, sometimes gifts are offered, and the best offering or gift is Dhamma. So that's what's called Dhamma Patisantara. So I was a disciple of Lompa Cha in Wapapong with Venerable Ajahn Viradhamma, and so accordingly he's giving me the opportunity to speak on some Dhamma. So then Dhamma is the greatest thing in the world. It's the path for our lives and the most important thing in our lives, and that's the case no matter who we are. Anyone who doesn't have Dhamma in their lives has only darkness in their life. Because if one doesn't have Dhamma, then one will only follow desire, and then one is dragged around all over the place by desire in every kind of existence. And so then anyone who doesn't have the opportunities to study and practice the Dhamma will have a lot of difficulty finding happiness in this world. in each of our daily lives, all of us, no matter who we are, we all go about our daily business with the same aim in mind. And that aim is that we're all seeking for happiness. No matter what we do, no matter what efforts we make, ultimately we're all aiming towards and seeking for happiness. So I've thought about this and reflected on the words of the Buddha, and it occurred to the words that come to mind relating to this is that there's no happiness from gain, there's only happiness from no gain, which first of all sounds like a strange concept, or maybe wouldn't make sense, or maybe it goes against what we'd normally expect. But then, with further consideration, then it really makes a lot of sense. Because each of us in the world, we've all for a long time been seeking this or that, and every time we've sought something, we've had the feeling that attaining that particular thing would bring us happiness. But then, no matter how much we desire something, then that happiness always seems to be very limited. And so, and that happiness never seems to last. So it seems to be that that true happiness from gain really doesn't exist. So this is the only by understanding this will we be able to break from the pattern of always desiring to fulfill that happiness and always hoping to experience happiness by fulfilling our various desires. So that leads me to mention another quote from the words of the Buddha, that the world is never enough and is never satisfied, and when we live in the world, we're slaves to desire. So then what that means then is that if following desires is not true happiness, then there must necessarily be happiness to be attained or to be gained by giving up our desires. So that what that points to is that the true path to happiness is by abandoning, by sacrificing, and by relinquishing. One has to be really willing to give and willing to give up. One has to be willing to put forth effort, willing to give up wrongness in the body, willing to give up wrong actions of the body, because to whatever extent that we can give up wrong bodily actions, then we'll experience happiness to that same extent. And then also to whatever extent that we can give up wrong speech and unskillful speech, then we'll experience happiness and satisfaction from refraining from that wrong and unskillful speech. And then also and especially regarding the mind, if we can give up even a little bit of desire and attachment in the mind, then that will make for much happiness. So for me, this really supports what the Buddha said, that there's no happiness from gain, only happiness from no gain. So it's especially the case then with our hearts or our minds that if we accumulate more and more thinking, then we feel more and more stressful. We feel and experience a lot more stress and chaos. Therefore, when we come and practice meditation like this, our aim is to reduce that proliferation and just make it as little as possible. And then the less proliferation there is in the mind, then the more peace one experiences in one's heart. So then that's our aim in meditation, is to see and experience the peace that comes from being at peace from all of those mental objects. And then that's where we experience the arising of happiness. It's the happiness that arises, or the happiness that has peace as its cause, and it's the happiness of the heart. Whether it's a little or a lot, then that's the happiness that we experience. And we practice and experience that happiness from the more coarse level onwards and onwards to the more refined level. So then all of those mental objects and proliferation, all of the aramana that we experience in our heart, if we don't know them and recognize them in, and understand them in time, then they'll make us suffer a lot, whether it's happiness or unhappiness, or a pleasant or unpleasant feeling, and that will make us suffer if we don't understand it. As I once said, and this has been published in Thailand, but in the Thai language, not yet in English, that thing which we put down is light, but the thing that we pick up is heavy. It's lightness and ease that comes from putting things down, but it's weight and burden that of course comes when we pick things up. So this is something that we can all experience for ourselves, especially on the external level, in terms of physical objects. When we pick up something, the longer that we hold it, then the heavier and heavier it becomes. We can experience that for ourselves. So even though technically then the weight of an object might not increase, then we know for ourselves when we pick it up and hold it for a long time that actually that object gets heavier and heavier, and it's light the instant we put it down. So then this is a teaching also that Lumpur Cha used to give to us at Wapapong, and he once said to us, don't even think that a little needle like a sewing needle isn't a heavy thing, because even if you were to pick up a needle and hold that up for a long time, then sooner or later you would want to put your arm down. So it goes to show that even a large or small object, regardless of its mass, would be heavy for us if we hold on to it for a long time. Therefore, the aim of our practice is to put things down, to abandon them, put down the burden. And then that lightness and peace is what we'll experience within our hearts. Therefore, we practice as one who puts down. We don't practice as one who gains things and picks things up. And as a result, our problems reduce more and more. The problems in society will reduce if we practice this way, and our individual experience will be that the problems in our own heart will also reduce. If we know what it is to make effort and to make sacrifice, then more and more we'll experience this lightness. That's also an experience that we can have in the present moment. Just like the instant you put something heavy down, then you feel the relief straight away. The instant you pick up something heavy, then you feel that burden straight away. It's the same in our mind. The instant we grab at a mental object, whether it's happiness or unhappiness, or a thought or a feeling that we like or don't like, the minute that we grab onto that, then that's heavy for us. And that's the same whether it's happiness or unhappiness. It's the same whether it's satisfaction or dissatisfaction. Both those positive and negative feelings and experiences are heavy to us if we pick them up and hold on to them. Lumpur Cha also used to remind us that everyone in the world wishes for gold and wishes for diamonds. We like to have those objects, even though they're the heaviest objects and so much weight, and yet everyone wants to pick up a bunch of gold, even though it's as heavy as lead. So then why is it that if there's a lump of lead lying right there, no one would want to pick it up? If it was gold, everyone would want it. It's a matter for the heart. It's an internal matter. Those things which we like and are pleased with, which satisfy us, then whether they're light or heavy, then we want them. But then, having taken them, then they're all heavy. It's a burden for the heart. If one acts in this way, if one acts just blindly, picking up and grabbing onto everything that one likes, then we won't understand that our true experience within our heart, and whether happiness or unhappiness arises in the heart, then equally we'll just grab onto those feelings, and we'll suffer because of unhappiness, and we'll even suffer because of our happiness. But if one knows in time the feelings and thoughts within one's own mind, and then if one can abandon those and let them go, not identify with them and attach to them, regardless of whether they're thoughts and feelings which satisfy us or which annoy us, it's it's our responsibility to make an effort to put them down and to abandon them, and that's what will lead us to peace. Just like the Buddha said, we should have a sense of motivation to bring up a sense of striving to abandon all of those unwholesome objects as they arise in the mind. And so that's why I say that anything, whether external or internal, having put it down, then it's light. But if you pick it up, then it's heavy. And therefore, the practice of Dhamma is a practice for the purpose of developing knowledge. But it's not knowledge in the normal sense. We're practicing to develop the one who knows, or practicing to develop the knowing. That means we're practicing to awaken the Buddha in our heart. Because Lungpo Cha also said, one shouldn't just practice to know, one should know the thing that one knows. One shouldn't just know. So what does that mean? Well, we all know on the kind of basic superficial level. We all experience all the various aspects of the heart. Like, for example, we know and experience greed. We know and experience hatred. And we know and experience delusion. But we're still victims of greed, hatred and delusion. And it's because of that that Lumpur Cha said that one should then know, one should practice to know and understand that thing that one's experiencing. One should then practice to see and understand that actually greed is something not attractive. Even though when we have greed, everything looks attractive, we should see that greed itself leads to harm. It's only through understanding greed that we'll be immune to greed. Otherwise, all kinds of gains and wealth and attractive things will always be cause for greed. But if we see that in fact greed is dangerous, we'll then understand that the true saying of the Buddha, that greed also destroys one's chances for enlightenment. One has to know and understand greed if one is to be able to abandon greed. So then this fits with Lumpur Cha's teaching that one should know the thing that one knows. Just like all kinds of evil and wrongdoing, we all know evil and unwholesomeness, but we can't yet fully abandon it. Therefore, we should practice to know that thing that we're experiencing to the point that we can abandon it. Just like anger, we shouldn't just know that we're angry. Anyone in the world will know and will admit that at times that they're angry. But the teaching is to know deeper and deeper, to go through all the layers until one can finally abandon that anger. The same with delusion. One should practice to know more and more deeply all of those aspects of the heart until the delusion is all gone. But if we just know on the most superficial level what we're feeling and then act according to those feelings, then we still don't really know. We still can't abandon delusion. But that's the way of regular people. But the way of the Buddha is to know and understand more and more deeply until finally all of those uncertain aspects and unwholesome aspects have been abandoned. Because the knowledge of the Buddha is the knowledge that leads to abandonment. And so there is such a thing as worldly knowledge, or knowing in a worldly way, but it's not good knowledge. It's not for the sake of goodness, it's for the sake of gaining more and more. And so that can be for the sake of cheating or stealing. The Buddha said we shouldn't just know things on the most basic, superficial level, but we should know on the deeper level. Just like in the teaching of Satipatthana, he said we should know the body in the body. And then what does it mean to know the body in the body? It means not just to know on a superficial level this body that we have, but to know it deeply with wisdom. to know and deeply and truly understand the superficial and temporary nature of the body, and to know and understand and see the heart in the heart means to know the heart in its changing nature, and the same for knowing feelings in feelings. Actually, all people see feelings, all people experience and know feelings, but then when we just know at that level, when those feelings are happy, then that causes us to want something. When the feelings of unhappiness, then there's no one that wants that. Therefore, it's at this very point that we should study and practice. If one knows and understands feelings, then one will see that both happiness and unhappiness can cause harm. Both delight and disappointment should be abandoned. If we can see the way that these feelings have been leading us along on a ride for a long time, that means we're beginning to know with wisdom. We're beginning to know deeper and deeper. So the heart is something which is especially difficult to know, but we're in contact with it all the time. So it's at this point that we should make an effort to understand. Otherwise, we just go along following it, not knowing anything, not able to separate the thoughts and feelings that we're experiencing. So our aim is to understand the true nature of the heart, to understand the experience of mental objects or aramana. As each of us probably know, if the mind's really peaceful, then there's nothing heavy, there's nothing weighing on it. One's got nothing to worry about, and our heart's light and peaceful. But then if we're experiencing the proliferating mind, then it seems like we've got so much to think about, we've got so many problems that it overwhelms us, and our heart feels heavy. This is the experience of not seeing the heart within the heart, and therefore we don't know any of those mental objects in time, and so we get caught up with them. That means we can't see and separate our heart from those objects. But if we do know, and we can see it and know it in time, and abandon it in time, then our life will become lighter and lighter, and happier and happier, more and more peaceful, because we know those mental objects. And that leads us along the way to knowing the deeper truths of anicchang, or impermanence, dukkhang, or suffering, and anatta, not being a self, not belonging to a self. This is where our practice is leading. It's for the sake of abandonment and for the sake of giving up those aramana, or the mental burden, the burden upon our heart. If we can practice rightly, it will lead us to peace. It will lead us to lightness, a free and easy feeling of the heart. Then in summary, I'll provide you with the very short instructions, a very short formula, which was taught to me by Rinpo Cha, and he taught it to all his students, all his disciples. But it's a very simple method of bhavana. So then bhavana, or mental development, in this case he said to develop the concept of uncertainty and simply meditate on all things with regard to the fact that it's not sure. It's not sure. So whatever might arise, just remember, it's not sure, it's not permanent, it's not lasting, and it's not as it seems. If one can really see all things in this way, then one will be happy for the rest of one's life, and one will be able to smile at whatever happens in one's life. And it means that one sees uncertainty in all things. If one doesn't see that aspect of not sure, then when thoughts and feelings arise in the mind, and one gets lost with those thoughts and feelings, one doesn't know that they're not sure, that they're just arising and sure to fade away. One gets carried away with them and carries on after them. One gets lost in mental objects, and that means one gets lost in the world, lost and confused on a train of thought or following after something. There's no end to it because one doesn't know. It's not sure. It's not worthy of grasping. If one knows, then it's not sure, then even if someone else is to insult us, and we'll just smile back. But then, if one doesn't know this simple formula, not sure, then when the wind blows, if the wind's too warm or wind cold, the wind's too cold, then we'll get unhappy. But if we know it's not sure, then we'll be sure that whichever way the wind's blowing, it's sure to change. And that way we can feel happy and comfortable in all situations. That way we're someone with the Dhamma in our heart. We know all things is uncertain. And this is a deep and fundamental understanding of Dhamma. And that it's that Dhamma which takes care of our heart in all situations. It means we're living with the Dhamma. So this is something which I got from Lumpo Cha, and therefore I'm passing it on. Because I can see that if one lives in this way, one can smile from morning to evening. Everything which one sees points to that same truth of uncertainty. If one knows the changing nature of all things, then even if one encounters difficulties and suffering, then one will gain happiness from that experience. But if one doesn't know that this thing about the teaching of uncertainty, that it's not sure, then one will keep on looking for happiness and never be able to find it anywhere. But if one does know, then that the Dhamma is there, taking over one's heart all the time and stopping it from falling into any kind of delusion. That understanding is there in the heart. Just from understanding uncertainty, one understands the truth of one's own life, one understands the true nature of the world, one understands all natural things, one understands the Dhamma. So therefore I give that to you as food for thought. It's been about an hour I've been speaking, including translation, and that's enough. So I will say to you then, Anumodana, I appreciate all of you making effort to come here and practice the Dhamma. So well done, and may you all develop in your practice. And then I'll stop now and leave it with just this much.
Sadhu, 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 sadhu.